Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome, welcome back to yet another edition of the Backboard Basics podcast. We continue to be allowed to broadcast despite some of the really controversial things that at Nick Nepik has said over the last several weeks and months and probably years. But we continue, you know it's true, we continue to make our way on the airwaves. I'm Kevin Hagland. You can find me on Twitter at OhThankKevin. That is Nick Nepik. You can find him on Twitter at Nick Nepik. And I'm really looking forward to this edition. Not that I haven't enjoyed all of the editions, but we're going to tackle the forwards today. And initially, we were going to do small forwards, but Nick brought up a great point in today's day of moving more and more towards positionless basketball, where the line's drawn between a 3 and a 4 and a 2 and a 3, and quite frankly, sometimes like a 1 and a 3
right.
can be a little blurred. Why not go after the entire group of forwards? And considering that's the case, there are a bunch of high-level picks that are going to be in this mix, as opposed to the shooting guards, which we agreed are, maybe not the best class in the world.
Right.
But I think for the forwards, we're going to have plenty to talk about here. But before we get to that, always want to update people on some of the players that have declared for the draft. But first, I wanted to go through the bizarre situation involving Brian Bowen. So he's declared for the NBA draft, kind of, because he's not hiring an agent, and he's also just waiting to see if the NCAA will clear him.
And for people who don't know, he's the guy that Louisville, allegedly paid $100,000. And so he was kicked out of Louisville, like dismissed from the team, and now he's at South Carolina. He's enrolled there, but he's not eligible to play. So he's sort of in a limbo.
And so, although, to be fair, the FBI, I guess, cleared him for some reason. So they're like, no, you're fine. We're not interested in taking you down. We're taking down Captain Scumbag.
He played the whole, he had no idea. His parents got paid, which, I mean, I guess there could be a very real thing behind that. Like, parents do things without their kids knowing all the time. So they might have done it with their son and just said, Brian, we really like Louisville. We think it's the best place for you and our pocketbooks. You should go there.
See, and that's where I would fall apart on the witness stand if I knew, because they would be like, your parents got $120,000. I would be like, what? Son of a, and I would like get really heated on the stand, but then people would know I was telling the truth because I'd probably freak out. I was like, they got all that money for me and I didn't get a new car or anything. So yeah, he's waiting to see, because he said if he's cleared by the NCAA and he can play for South Carolina, his five-star recruit, by the way,
yeah,
he will withdraw from the NBA draft. But if he doesn't hear, or if they say no, then he'll stay in the NBA draft, which to me makes a lot of sense because it's clearly like it could hurt his draft stock. I get that. But otherwise, he's just going to be doing nothing. I mean, going to school, but come on.
Yeah, like is that what his career is? Yeah. Basketball, so he might as well like try to get ready for that in some way that he is, I guess, able to or allowed.
Absolutely. Initial thoughts, NCAA clear him? I say no.
I say no. I don't think they can. Well, they could, but
I mean, the FBI cleared him, so they
could. The NCAA rarely does things that make sense.
Sure.
So I don't think they'll, not that, I mean, they wouldn't have a case for not clearing him, but I don't think they will.
All right, so we've got several people that went ahead and declared for the NBA draft. One of the most interesting is Mo Wagner, because this is a guy who, man, if we're talking about people who raise their draft stock throughout the season and then in the NCAA tournament, I would argue that Wagner is pretty darn high in the list, because he's gone from somebody who you're like, I don't know, to second rounder to, ooh, he's going to get taken in the first round now.
Yeah, you know, we talked about was, I mean, probably several times, but a few weeks ago, it's hard to not put a lot of stock into NCAA tournament games because everybody's watching. It's the biggest stage. You know, that's what most fans care the most about. And so when you watch a guy like Wagner show out in the NCAA tournament, and especially when he's emotional, the camera's on him because he's loud, he's a leader. It's hard not to, you know, let him jump up on your board because he did so much. But it's I think a kind of decision for him that is, you know, I guess leave while you're ahead. Like, this is the best.
He's never going to be a higher
prospect. Right, this is the highest stock he's ever going to have. So he's taking his chance and he's going with it.
What do you think is the biggest improvement for him, his draft stock or the fact that people know how to say his last name, right?
Well, considering that when Dirk won the MVP in the finals, David Stern could not pronounce his name correctly.
Sure.
I would say that because it seems like people have a tough time pronouncing, I guess, German last names like Nowitzki, Wagner. They want to use that W sound, but, you know, who am I to tell them what to do?
I mean, you are, because that's not how you say it. And if somebody says something wrong, you should feel free correcting them. All right. And then next on the list is... It was sad for me. I know it was sad for you. We talked about it last week.
But was it?
It was, because I really thought Wendell Carter's mom was going to convince him to stay in school somehow.
Now, did you see The Undefeated had an article about Wendell Carter and talked with both of his parents? It was really fascinating. His mom was like very much pushing him to go back to school.
Yeah.
And his dad was, we talked about it, but his dad was very much pushing him to go to the NBA. So I'm sure it was
a... His dad made a good point. Like, school will still be there. You're a top 10 pick now. It makes sense.
No, it does.
But
it
I was kind of like, oh, maybe he comes back.
And he's
back.
A smart guy. Like, he's not going to lose his smarts. And I know it's like this, I think, at every big school. But when they give you a scholarship, it's good for life. Like, you can come back in the summer and take classes if that's what you want to do. I know guys at Duke do that. Guys at Kentucky have done that. So if he wants to get his degree at some point... He has the opportunity to do
that. As long as you play well, it's good for life. Otherwise, they can take your scholarship away at any point.
They can do whatever they want.
I mean, but the NCAA doesn't care about regulating that.
No.
But this other stuff, oh, you better watch it. And now we get to the person who, I know this had to make you cringe because you hate the awesome city of Garland and the High School of Lakeview Centennial.
I don't know if that's either of those
right
things.
Right down
are,
the street from
I think
my
I've
house.
Been to Garland once in my entire life,
kinda,
twice maybe.
Kind of hurtful. Is Zaire Smith from Texas Tech declared for the NBA draft? This is somebody that, the man, to go along with Wagner, this is another guy whose stock has shot through the roof.
More than anyone.
Yeah, but I am curious your thoughts on this. Does his stock skyrocket because he throws down awesome dunks that everyone sees, or because there's a player that's not fully formed now that could be a legit NBA player?
I think the athleticism is the thing that everyone drools over, because in today's league, that's what everyone wants, is like freak athleticism. And I guess that goes to the dunking. Like, you can't dunk like he does if you're not a freak athlete, but there's a lot of room to grow for Zaire Smith, but maybe he was told, you know, similar to Wagner, your stock's never going to be higher. You go back to school and you could improve as a player, but, you know, you have a chance to be a lottery pick, or you're, you know, for sure getting picked in the first round. So this is your chance. You might as well take it. And I have no issue with that, but there's definitely room for improvement. But I mean, he's a freak athlete. He's good defensively, which not a lot of young players are. And so if you don't have to teach him that, you know, you've got a step already. Now, he's going to need to learn to shoot. He's got to be better offensively, but he'll defend and he'll play with energy, and he's super athletic. So that's a great start. I mean, there's a chance he's a lottery pick.
I was just going to ask you if he makes the lottery.
If I had to peg it, I would say like right outside the lottery.
16
to 19.
Who,
you know, teams do things all the time that are a little surprising. But, you know, like you said before, when he came out of Garland, was he a three-star recruit? I think that's what he was.
Yeah.
I mean, he was virtually unknown, we'll say that. And then goes to Tech and in 1 year just blows up. And, I mean, we see that from time to time, but this is pretty, you know, crazy how much he's, you know, blew up in his 1 year. And
I mean,
the tournament just helped him.
If you look at the top of the draft and some of the top prospects we've gone over the last several weeks and months, I mean, there hasn't been a lot of change. Like, Marvin Bagley rolled into the draft as the number one recruit. DeAndre Ayton rolled in as a huge recruit. Jaren Jackson is a huge recruit. Everyone's known about Luka for, like, the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Most of the people at the top of this draft, Mo Bamba was a five-star recruit. Most of the people that have remained at the top of this draft are people that, like, you could have guessed
right
a year ago. So props to Zaire Smith, and it looks like he will be staying in the draft. So
right.
This is not an exploratory mission for him. I'll be fascinated to see where he goes. I'm also interested in the fact that your description of him is, it seems off from most of the guys that we hear about. Like, a lot of times when we talk about athleticism, it's strictly on the offensive end. And when you talk about defensive
right.
players, they're usually like slower hustle defensive players, not freakish athletic.
Like, they just play really hard.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them good. And he does that. He plays hard, but his athleticism has translated defensively before it has on the offensive end. Now, he can cut to the basket, he can catch lobs, but as far as like creating with the ball, that is not one of his strengths right now.
All right. So there's the update on a lot of the declarations. Obviously, we were all thrilled around here in the DFW that the Mavericks won the coin flip with the Atlanta Hawks. So they will be slotted third going into the draft lottery, which is May 15th.
Yeah, we're under a month.
Woo, here we go. Now, let's get to the forwards. And I'm going to go ahead and make sure that this doesn't turn into another Luka love fest. But I would say if you classified him as a three, he'd probably be at the top of the leaderboard for the forwards.
He would, but we did not. We decided to put him as a two, just considering if he came to Dallas, where he would probably end up.
Exactly. I just want to let you guys know. So what are we looking at here? Top five, top ten?
Top five forwards in this year's class, according to myself.
All right. Let's go. Number one, I'm ready.
Do you want to guess or do you want me to just tell you? Because I think I'm
going
to
guess that even though you have so turned against Marvin Bagley in the past, you're going to go ahead and stick him as a forward and put him at the top of the board.
I personally have him as a big.
So okay.
Like, not necessarily like a center, but I if you're grouping them guards, forwards, bigs, I have Marvin Bagley as a big. But I guess he'd probably end up playing like the forward spot most places, but I list him as
okay.
a big.
Okay, and that's another interesting thing is, we'll stop for just one second, is that we already talked about the lines blurring, but you're seeing that so much. I can't believe
it's just more and more every class, I feel like. And I guess every year, even in the NBA, but with every class of players, most you're like, what position are they? And you're like, well, Luka Doncic is a point guard, but he's also a shooting guard. He could play forward. You might even put him at the four spot if you wanted to. Just like before you know it, they can play everywhere.
And just wait until next year's draft, right? Because you look at the top three for Duke with Reddish, Barrett, and Williamson. They're all theoretically small forwards, but they all play differently. And they're like, oh yeah, no, they'll all be on the court at the same time. Even though when you just look at their recruiting profile, it says SF, SF, SF,
right.
And you're thinking, well, this will never work,
like,
but watch.
I think Cam Reddish and RJ Barrett are the like exact same height and almost the same wingspan. Zion Williamson's a little shorter and just a bigger body. And they all will be on the floor at the same time playing, I mean, in that way, different positions when they're all, you know, 10 years ago would profile exactly the same. It's just fascinating.
And I think that the Golden State Warriors definitely pushed the process forward even more. It was already kind of going that direction.
Right.
But when, you know, you see the lineup of Doom can have a 6'8" center and somebody who's classified as a big could operate probably anywhere from the 3 to 5, I'm not surprised, and that's why we need to distinguish these things. Plus, if you're taking out players like Bagley and Jackson, then the big class would really be hurting behind Ayton. So, all right, who are we going with number one then?
Number one for me is Mikal Bridges.
Oh!
The Villanova forward.
Okay.
Yeah, the 3-and-D prospect for Villanova. He's a guy that while he had a great season all year, the casual fan, you know, really got a good glimpse of him in the tournament when Villanova just went on their huge run. But, we've talked about him quite a bit, but 3-and-D prospect. I was getting, not into arguments, but just, back and forth on Twitter yesterday about Mikal Bridges and people said, well, he doesn't have a very high ceiling. And I countered that with, but he has a really, really high floor.
Yeah. Like he has maybe the highest
floor. He shoots threes, he plays defense, and, you know, he could fit anywhere. Any team can use that. And so for that reason, I just value that a lot. The chances that you're going to completely miss on a guy like him is really low. Whereas you look at Michael Porter Jr., you could hit a home run. Yeah. He could be one of the best players in the league in 5 years. But he could never play basketball again if he hurts his back. Like, there's two sides to every coin.
If you told me that Michael Porter turned out to be Kevin Durant, I would believe you. If you told me that he turned out to be Michael Beasley, I would believe you.
Right.
And
exactly.
Anywhere in between. So my contention would be, especially not in the top 10, in the whole draft, now, this second, and I understand you do not draft just for what's happening in this moment alone, I would argue that Mikal Bridges is the most complete player in this draft.
I'd probably agree with you. DeAndre Ayton has, you know, too much trouble on defense. Yep. Marvin Bagley, a little bit more of the same. You know, you go down the list.
Bamba struggles still offensively.
And might forever. Yeah. I mean, Jaren Jackson, while he has a lot of tools, he's really young and pretty raw.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody has their flaws, and Mikal Bridges does too, but I think they're less prominent than other guys, and I definitely would agree with you. I think he's the most complete guy right now.
Then I guess the question becomes, and let's just go ahead and play off of a neutral field. Let's say that you need a player, or you could use a player like Mikal Bridges. Let's take need out of the equation. At what position do you feel comfortable drafting a player that, I mean, to be fair, is probably never going to be a home run? Like, I don't necessarily envision Mikal Bridges
right.
making a string of all NBA teams. But then again, does this not sound like kind of the scouting report for Kawhi Leonard
right.
when he was rolling out there? And so that's probably unfair to put that comparison on him, because Mikal Bridges will probably show up to play. But anyways, is at what position in the draft, do you feel comfortable taking a guy who might always just be a great part of your team, but never a leader on your team?
That's a really good question.
Thank you.
That's because I think of him like in this way. He's not going to lead your, like, he's not going to be James Harden, for example, you know, perennial MVP, but he'll be like a really good contributor on a really good team every year. Like, he'll be, you know, I think he'll be better than this, but I think of Jason Terry. The Mavericks would not have won the NBA championship without Jason Terry. He had the most points, I think, in that game six, like 27 or something like that.
And he shut down LeBron.
But nobody ever thinks of Jason Terry as a like a all-time great player.
Right.
That's what I think of Mikal Bridges. Like, he could win you an NBA finals, but he's never going to be an MVP candidate. So at that point, man, I guess if I think my team is pretty close,
If
I think they're a few pieces away, then I feel pretty comfortable. Let me look at the
I was
going to
say,
order.
But that's not probably going to fit the vast majority of these teams.
I mean, probably like
seven, eight,
around there. I mean, eight is going to be Cleveland right now. And so if you're going there,
how close are they really going to be?
I mean, I think LeBron's not going anywhere, but that's a different topic for a different day. But anyway, yeah, seven to eight range is where I'd feel the most comfortable.
Okay, but even if you're at five, you're not pulling the trigger?
And probably not.
I asked you this before. Let's say that you're sitting at seven, and they both fall, and Mikal Bridges is sitting there, but so is Michael Porter.
Gosh.
And your team is, this past year, your team was 41-41.
I'm taking Mikal Bridges.
Woo!
I have him ranked above Michael Porter, so I can't flip it there.
I'm going to switch the scenario just a little bit. Your team this past year was 27-55. Are you still doing the same thing?
I think I am.
Wow.
I'll get put on the chopping block for that. But
yeah, that's going to be your Sam Bowie pick right there, and it's going to throw you down. Maybe we'll revisit that 1984 draft, and people are like, oh, I can't believe Jordan was number three. There's two stupid teams. And I always want to point out, no, there's one stupid team that took Sam Bowie. The team, the Rockets, that went number one took Hakeem Olajuwon.
Right.
He is like a top 10 player of all time, maybe top 12 to 15. He won two championships and he was awesome. I don't think they look at that and they're like, we really dropped the ball. Like, I know you didn't get Michael Jordan, but you got, like, your scouting department did things right.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Aside from not knowing how to spell his name, which eventually he added that H on there, but that's neither here nor there. That could have been somebody else's fault. All right. You got Mikal Bridges at the top of the forward list. Then I'm going to say we stick with perhaps the same last name and we go to Michigan State Bridges?
Not true.
Oh.
He is number three, though.
Okay.
Michael Porter Jr. is the second.
Oh, even though we've established you hate him.
I don't hate him. He's okay. Let me not get on a soapbox here.
No, I think you should.
Not only is he recovering from a back injury. Like, put that aside. He's a tall, athletic forward. Like, that's pretty good, all right? And he can score all three levels. So, you know, up near the basket, two-point jumpers, three-point jumpers. But he's pretty inefficient.
He's a chucker.
Right. We talked about this before. He's an inefficient scorer who doesn't really rebound. So you can't go small with him, even though he's 6'10". Now, maybe that changes because rebounding is a lot about effort and if he gets in the league, maybe he flips that switch, although I might argue that that's not a great quality if he's already not, you know, putting forth that effort. But he's an inefficient scorer who you can't play small with, who's coming off a back injury. I mean, there's upside there, absolutely. Like, he showed it in high school. He's a great player. But all those things just give me a little pause, enough to put him, I mean, he's not, I don't have him like 13th on my board or anything like that, but he's number two on the forward list.
Do you have any suggestions or any ideas of how to avoid the sense of AAU entitlement going forward? Because I'm going to use Michael Porter Jr. as the perfect example. So he literally did nothing in college. You know, he got hurt in the first 3 seconds, and then he came back and he looked god-awful in his two games that he came back. And yet he's still probably going to go in the top seven because of what he did in high school and on the AAU circuit. So when you're talking about how bad do you want it in terms of rebounding, defense, and everything else, if you look at Michael Porter Jr., I think you can make a strong argument how much effort do you have to give? Because he did, let's be honest, he did nothing in college of value.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yet he's still going to be a top seven pick. And I'm not saying I don't want this to sound like he doesn't deserve to be a top seven pick. I'm just saying, how do you deal with the entitlement going forward? Because future players can look at him and say he didn't do anything in college, but based on his AAU resume, he still went top seven. How much effort do I really need to put out? Not that Michael Porter didn't put out effort, because I know he worked back from an injury. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It's still.
And it's not just him. Like, it's.
No, not at all.
It's happened for, you know.
I mean, you could make that argument with Ben Simmons,
right,
who flat out quit on his team, and now he's an NBA superstar.
Right. I think you can make it with anybody. I would say that it doesn't help coaches and teams that are preaching effort, because they're going to keep picking guys based on upside and based on what they did at the AAU level, no matter what they do in college, I feel like. I mean, unless you just completely bomb in college and play horrible, then I think you're going to lose your, you know, the stock that you had built in high school. But if you just kind of coast, or if you're Ben Simmons and your team is horrible, so you don't really care, it really doesn't matter, and nobody's shown that it matters. So that's an interesting question. I think, you know, Michael Porter Jr. is unique in that he did come back from a back injury, but he didn't do anything in college. And when he played, you know, I don't know how much he really had to gain by playing. Maybe there were whispers that, hey, you need to get out there and at least show you're looking okay. Despite workouts, you need to get out there. But I don't know. Like,
might I argue to you, if they would have made the Elite Eight and he would have scored 20, 30, and 25, that he's now in the top three conversation?
That's probably true. I would say, who would he jump? He'd probably jump Bagley. I mean, even though Bagley was awesome in the tournament, people have been lowering what they think of him for a while now. So, yeah, if they did that, I think he'd be a top five lock, certainly. But he'd probably get in that top three conversation.
And if you had to guess right now, probably not a top five.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, he's right there, but I'd say probably not.
No, I think he's just out, like, probably the sixth or seventh pick.
All right, in terms of athleticism, what would teams expect to see from him?
pretty athletic. He runs the floor well, good enough, you know, to run the floor, to, you know, pull up, to catch and shoot. Not super excited. Excited is not a good word to say there, but not really into going into contact. So he already avoided contact a lot before a back injury. You'd think that, you know, just like whenever you, even if you sprain your ankle, the first day you're like, all right, I think I'm good. You still walk kind of gingerly on it. You think that it'd be the same thing for Michael Porter Jr., only to like a higher degree because you had a serious back injury and underwent surgery. So that doesn't look like it bodes well for him. His athleticism is enough to where it can translate to defensive versatility, which every team wants. You know, they want to be able to switch everything, one through four, step out on the perimeter, or one through five even, and step out on the perimeter. And so he has that. But athletically, I like what he brings. But he, I don't know, he's just, the scoring is too inefficient for me to just be in love with him.
Okay.
But athletically, I like what he has, especially if he's 100% healthy.
All right, let's move to, that's a big if there. That, I mean, when you look at the combine, which will be in mid-May, right around the time of the lottery, that he strikes me as someone who that combine is going to be vital, both in terms of the physicals and in terms of some of those interviews for him. We move to number three, and this is somebody on the forwards list that, I mean, you would have thought we would be having this conversation a year ago. In Miles Bridges,
He
was on the cover of Sports Illustrated for their NCAA season preview, and there was a great story about how Izzo was telling him to go into the draft, and Miles Bridges said, "You don't want me back?" And he goes, "Of course I want you back, but you're going to be a lottery pick." And so once he knew that Bridges made his mind up, Tom Izzo said, "Oh, I would be an idiot not to take him back." Now, there's lots of other things that Tom Izzo apparently is okay with that I would constitute him as being an idiot for, too.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, don't you? And so, Miles Bridges slots in at number three. And Miles Bridges is somebody that I feel like, maybe it's because of Jaren Jackson, maybe it's because they flamed out in the tournament. I don't know what the reason is. I feel like not as much buzz on him as I would have guessed at the beginning of the year.
Right. He really picked up steam, but like right before he decided to go back to school, so sort of late in the draft evaluation process, people were really talking a lot about him. And personally, I liked him a lot last year, and I still do.
But like lottery pick last year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And probably in like the same range, like eighth or ninth pick. Like unlike Robert Williams, who probably is outside the lottery looking in, Miles Bridges is sort of in the same spot as far as guys who were projected in the lottery as freshmen and then went back to school. I like Miles Bridges' game. I think he's at NBA 4. He was, you know, forced on the perimeter this year because Tom Izzo played, you know, Nick Ward and Jaren Jackson. Nick Ward is a traditional big who's very clunky and slow and back to the basket.
I knew that because you said traditional big, which is usually what I think.
And then Jaren Jackson, who I think would be awesome. If they would have played small, Jaren Jackson at the 5, Miles Bridges at the 4, I think it would have made them so much better, especially offensively. But anyway.
So would you say that's the most questionable decision that Tom Izzo has made in the last 12 to 18 months?
The last 6 months.
Okay.
Because he stuck with it in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But Miles Bridges, his shot is way better, even though it looks kind of weird because he was forced in the perimeter. So that helps him. Like his shot profile is better. But he, like Zaire Smith, super athletic, maybe the best dunker in college basketball as a freshman. Zaire Smith might have taken over that role when he came into school. But his odd release, you know, people will pause at that, but his three-point shot goes in. He's a decent shooter. And he shoots off the dribble as well. But I like him as a four. He's got a strong body. He can be physical, plays defense, plays really hard, has a good and this is something I don't think I don't look at enough, but he's a leader. Like he led that team as a sophomore, even though there were seniors on it. He's a leader type guy, and I think that benefits you, especially when you go through the pre-draft process with you know, interviews and talking to teams.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's a guy and he's like pretty lackadaisical, doesn't really care, but he's really talented. And there's Miles Bridges. He's like, I'll come in. I want to get shots up every morning. I'm going to work as hard as your veterans. I want to shadow them. Like that. Want to work and want to be a leader, I think benefits guys a lot, especially guys who are jockeying for position in the mid to late lottery. I think that might help him a lot. But I like Miles Bridges. If the Mavericks were picking 7 to 9. That is who I would probably...
Which we now know is a statistical impossibility.
Right. I would probably push for him as one of my wants there.
Fast and or athletic enough to consistently be a 3 if I needed to run him out there.
I would say you could put him in there in situations,
but not consistently.
Not all the time. Yeah, I would, you know, Harrison Barnes, you know, we talk about the Mavericks, that's where we are, but he is best offensively in Dallas as a 4, but he wants to play the 3. But, you know, whenever they would put Dirk at the center and blah, 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 they would move Harrison Barnes to the 4. And I liked him like that offensively, but defensively, there was, you know, sometimes he would struggle there. And Miles Bridges, I think, would be best as an NBA 4, but maybe with your lineup, you'd have to move him to the 3.
That's an interesting comparison right there. Let's pretend that we live in some sort of bizarro universe where Harrison Barnes is also eligible for the draft. Would you take him or would you take Miles Bridges?
Knowing what I know now about Harrison Barnes?
Yes, you know all the same things.
I would probably take Harrison Barnes.
Okay.
But I feel like they have similarities.
Yes, no, hence why I asked.
But Miles Bridges is a lot more athletic, but Harrison Barnes, that's a tough question.
Harrison Barnes better scorer?
Probably.
Okay.
You could go more of a go-to guy, and we've seen that in Dallas now. They featured him, especially last season, without a Dennis Smith Jr., you know, when Dirk was out a lot of the year. But yeah, I'd say he's more of a go-to scorer.
Okay. So forwards thus far, we've got Mikal Bridges, 1, Michael Porter Jr., number 2, Miles Bridges, number 3. What direction are we going here? Number 4. Now we're talking, I feel like, fringe lottery picks.
And this is a guy we've talked about as a fringe lottery pick. Kevin Knox, the Kentucky forward.
Now, and Kevin Knox is somebody who, man, I'll be really honest, and not that his draft stock has plummeted or anything like that, but I thought going into the season, Kevin Knox had a shot at becoming one of the faces of college basketball.
Yeah.
I really did. Considering what a heated recruiting war it was for him between Duke and Kentucky, and then kind of a surprise that he ended up going with Kentucky, and as much as I don't like Kentucky and John Calipari, I mean, traditionally, that's a program that plays well in the regular season before they flame out in the postseason. Sorry, couldn't help it. But, you know, so I thought Kevin Knox had a real shot to become one of the faces of college basketball. It just didn't happen.
It was
why?
It was so inconsistent.
Yeah.
I mean, early on in the year, Kentucky struggled as a team, and then Kevin Knox would drop like 30 points, and you're like, here he comes. This is the Kevin Knox we've all waited for. And then he'd drop back down to, you know, whatever it was, and, you know, 10, 12 points. But he has all the tools to be a go-to scorer in the NBA. It's just a matter of putting it all together. And when you're an inconsistent scorer, that seems to be the word everyone has for you is, well, if he could put it all together, he could be a go-to guy. But like you said, fringe lottery. I mean, a guy before the season, when you're talking about one-and-done freshman.
He had top 5 written all over him.
Top 5, top 8 at worst.
Yeah.
And then now we're talking 16, 17, maybe 15, something like that. I mean, there's a chance he goes in the lottery, but now we're talking like just outside the lottery for him. And he was another guy like Wendell Carter Jr. There was a chance he went back to school. I mean, there was a little bit of a debate there. And, you know, when you're a lock first round pick, I'd have a hard time telling you need to go back to school because, you know, how much more can you really do for yourself? But
right.
Kevin Knox is a guy that his season, his season hurt him in the way that he was just so inconsistent. When he was good, he was really good, but then he kind of just disappeared on a Kentucky team that really didn't have an identity for a lot of the year, didn't have a go-to guy for a lot of the year. And when he was that go-to guy offensively, they really, I think, were at their best. And so if he wants to be at his best in the NBA, he needs to just continue to score in multiple ways. You know, he shot the ball pretty well in college and was able to attack the basket and open up his game. If he can do that, I think he has real potential as a go-to scorer in the league. But, you know, like you said, fringe lottery, we'll see where he goes. But he would have been probably at the top of this list. I mean, definitely, you know, right there with Michael Porter Jr. before the season started. And now both of them have kind of slipped a little bit.
And it's interesting, like, I would kind of compare him to last year, Jonathan Isaac, from Florida State. Not the same player or anything, but if you told me going into the draft last year, Jonathan Isaac would eventually emerge, and maybe he still could, as the best player in that draft, I would believe it. But if you told me he'll fade away into obscurity, I'd believe it too. I feel the same way about Kevin Knox. If you tell me that he becomes a perpetual all-star, I believe it. If you tell me he becomes just a guy, I believe it.
Because the NBA is full of young players with a lot of potential. Yep. That never put it together. And he could just be another one of those.
No, absolutely. All right. So who are we wrapping up the top five with in terms of our forwards? And in case anyone's jumping in late, I mean, it's a podcast. You can just go back to the beginning. We're essentially merging small forwards and power forwards, only part of the power forwards, and then shipping off the rest of the power forwards with the centers in a future episode for the bigs. So who's wrapping up the forward list here?
Little more of an unknown guy. Melvin Frazier played at Tulane.
Oh,
is number five on this list. Got to watch him when he played SMU here.
Now, hold on. Is this like an indie film pick, or do you really believe?
No, I really.
Okay.
I mean, I like to be a little off the beaten
path.
Yes,
I know.
As you have come to find out. But this is, there's probably people that disagree, whatever. But I think this is a very real spot for him. He's profiles similar to Mikal Bridges in that he profiles as a 3-and-D kind of player, has potential as a scorer. He needs to handle the ball better. So right now he's more of just a shooter. But his energy is awesome. You know, he came here and played against SMU. That was when Shake Milton was still healthy for SMU, and when Shake was having a great season, scoring the ball a lot, and Frazier frustrated him like crazy. The first half, Milton couldn't do anything. I mean, his defense was awesome. He has really long arms, so he gets into passing lanes and is able to get out in transition. He's, you know, throws down some pretty good dunks, which is, you know, seems like everybody these days. But 3-and-D potential, love his defense, love his energy, and sort of did himself, not sort of, he did himself a lot of favors from the end of last season to this season, because I saw his name a little bit this summer, like as guys who could, you know, jump into the draft conversation. But now he's a first-round type talent.
And you think he'll go in the first round?
Probably late first round.
Okay. Do you know how long it's been since a Tulane player was taken in the NBA draft?
I'm going to say 2002. That's a complete guess.
Not bad. 1997, Gerald Honeycutt was taken with the 10th pick of the second round of the 1997 NBA draft. And as you recall, he would go on to, I don't know.
I really missed on him.
Exist, I guess. Don't really know a lot about Gerald Honeycutt. All right, so Melvin Frazier from Tulane to round out the top five.
Yeah, one more thing on him. Versatility is something that, you know, every NBA team wants, not only with shooting, but defensive versatility. So you could switch him 1 through 4. He's athletic enough to stay in front of guards, i.e. Shake Milton, or, you know, big enough to stay with a 4. And has the long arms really help you. Like, if you're not super, you don't have the super thick body and you're not strong, if you have long arms, that reach helps you a bit and kind of makes up for it. And that's what Melvin Frazier has.
All right. And then, okay. And I asked this question again and again and again. What prevents him from going higher? Because in the old days, it would be, well, he's not at a bigger school, blibbity blabbity. But if you're talking about that versatility in an NBA that we've already discussed a couple times today is moving more and more towards versatility, why wouldn't a player like that be more coveted? Because maybe he goes in the first round. But if I told you he went in the second round, would that be the most shocking thing you've ever heard?
No, it wouldn't. I mean, he doesn't have anything off the dribble. So putting the ball on the floor at the next level is not something he will excel at. He's a shooter on offense, and that's limiting. You know, people want multiple ball handlers these days, and I think that hurts him. But also, you know, just like Jalen Brunson, if he was a freshman and would have had the season he just had, he's probably in lottery discussions, but he's a junior. And Melvin Frazier, same way. You know, older guys, while Mikal Bridges is not suffering from that, most of the time, older guys, just for whatever reason, seems to be a bias against them because they're already 20 or 21 or whatever the case may be.
Maybe that could be a separate podcast. You go through the worst things that older guys have to deal with. Would you be in on that podcast?
Just in general?
Yeah, just in general. In terms of basketball.
That's
just
fair.
In general.
I mean, I used to work at a nursing home.
Oh, wow.
That's true.
Really turned that into a humanizing aspect of a stupid joke I made. All right, so we're looking at our top five forwards. We got Mikal Bridges at number one from Villanova, Michael Porter Jr., number two from Missouri, Miles Bridges, number three from Michigan State, Kevin Knox, number four from Kentucky, Melvin Frazier, number five from Tulane. If you had to tell me who is the most likely to be a star in this group, I'm talking all NBA, all-star again and again, who's most likely to be a star? I feel like we might double up perhaps on this.
Michael Porter Jr.
We're absolutely doubling up.
Like, that's absolutely going to happen.
And then on the flip side, the crash and burn potential. Michael Porter Jr.
First game as a NBA player, hits the ground a little too hard. There goes his back. There goes his career. Like, that could happen.
Okay, but I want to focus on something different with him just really quick, because I know we talk about that, and that's perfectly reasonable. When you have back surgery and some said it's spinal issues at the age of 20, then that's a concern in terms of how well you're going to play basketball professionally.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's not injuries, but I told you at the end of the day, Michael Porter turns out to be, like, not as bad as Anthony Bennett, but, like, just a guy. Why? If it's not injuries, why does he not excel?
Because he's a way worse Andrew Wiggins. So, like, think about Andrew Wiggins. Great player, like a solid scorer, but very inconsistent in his scoring. And for Michael Porter, when he's not scoring, I don't... Like, there's nothing that stands out to me. Like I said, he's not a great rebounder. His defense has potential, but he's not a great defender. So if he's not scoring, he's sort of just taking up space. And so I think he never figures out how to score at the NBA level, and he just becomes that athletic guy that, man, if it clicks one time, it's going to do that forever. If we just give him one more chance. You know, the Jurickson Profar, speaking of baseball, the Jurickson Profar of basketball, so to speak, because very heralded as a prospect. But and he has the athleticism, you know, that stands out. He's 6'10". That helps. But if he just can never become a great scorer and on a consistent basis, he'll just sort of get stuck, I think, jumping from roster to roster, and you'll sort of forget about him.
Okay, then on the flip side, I tell you that ding, 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 the team in the draft who took him 6, 7, 8, whatever it turns out to be, they got the best player in the draft. They got all NBA player, or an all-star again and again and again. Why?
He's a great scorer. He learns to play really good defense.
You think that potential is there?
Yeah, the athleticism is there. It's just a matter of, I think, honing in on that skill. And he also works and becomes a great rebounder. So you can go small with him. You could play him at, you know, in your lineup of doom or death or whatever you want to call it, and put him at the five, and then you have ball handlers and shooters all over the floor, and he's able to get you rebounds against so-called centers. I think that's when you'd say, man, we got a perennial all-star, and looking back 6 years ago, we were a little worried about his back injury, but that surgery was as good as they said it was, and he's not hurt at all. And everything we thought he could be, he's turned into.
All right. Do you think he's more likely to become a plus defender or a plus rebounder?
I'll say plus defender.
Okay. And I just wanted to stop down because Michael Porter Jr. is clearly the most fascinating prospect in this group.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even close. And
I'm sure at some point we'll talk about his little brother who has made his way into draft conversations.
That's right. Yeah. All right. We will pick that up. Any other notes about forwards under the radar guys you didn't get to mention, or anybody else who you want to throw their name out there so they can get a little love?
Just a shout out to a local guy, Jare Foster at SMU. He is declared for the draft. He tore his ACL in January. I don't know if he's hired an agent, so he might still go back to school, but a guy that I think has some potential in a few years to be a rotation player, but, you know, still rehabbing that ACL, but shout out to him just because he's local. How about that?
Most likely undrafted free agent?
Especially coming off an ACL injury.
Okay. All right. So for Nick Nepik, remember you can find him on Twitter @NickNepik. I've been Kevin Hagland. You can find me on Twitter at Oh Thank Kevin. Shameless plug alert. If you're in the DFW or if you listen on the TuneIn app, you can find my regular show 7 to 11 p.m. Central weekdays, the KNC Masterpiece at KNC 105.3 on Twitter and the KNC Masterpiece on Facebook. And for all of those shameless plugs, we've been the Backboard Basics Podcast. And until next week, I got nothing.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.